Chapter 6. Training. Introduction. Characteristics of training. The training of insurgents and terrorists necessitates the combining of hard skills, political or religious indoctrination, and psychological preparation. This last category is examined fully in the companion to this work, the second edition of Human Factors Considerations of Undergrounds in Insurgencies, and so will not be emphasized in this chapter. Nevertheless, radicalization and moral disengagement is a key feature of insurgent training and one of the characteristics that makes the process so different from the training of regular military forces. The focus of this chapter is the function of training that underlies the development of underground, auxiliary, and guerrilla forces. It is at once obvious why insurgencies require training. Guerrillas, saboteurs, terrorists, administrative specialists, messengers, and other operatives can accomplish their tasks only if they are competent in the use of weapons, explosives, communications equipment, and so forth. But insurgent training is driven by purposes beyond mere skill building. Trainers also use the training process to enhance the movement's security, provide propaganda and indoctrination, and select and develop future leaders. A new member's training after joining an insurgent movement is typically heavy in propaganda, historical justification, and ideology. In this respect, the underground function of training differs significantly from the training of a conscripted or professional soldier. In the latter case, a recruit comes from a society and a schooling background that likely look favorably upon, or at least are not hostile toward, military service. Normal childhood development provides ideological preparation for later service, and military training institutions do not have to spend much time reiterating historical justification and ideological grounds for service to the recruits. This is not the case in insurgent training. Instead, leaders create a training environment rich in ideology, so as to immerse the recruit in a new set of corporate values designed to supplant his former loyalty to society or the government. During this period of initial training, insurgent leaders evaluate new recruits for political or religious reliability. Thus, initial entrance training serves the dual functions of skill building and gatekeeping. Only demonstrated ability, as well as fidelity to the cause, will lead to more advanced training for the recruit. In addition, leaders evaluate the prospective new member's personal habits and demeanor, sometimes rejecting those considered too immature, too given to drink, or too talkative as security risks. Because insurgency training must be conducted clandestinely, it typically takes longer than similar training in a conventional military force. Training tends to occur sporadically, in intervals of short duration. Likewise, insurgency training tends to focus on training of individuals or very small units rather than on the collective training of larger units. This is in part because of the difficulty of maintaining secrecy when training large groups, and also because insurgent military operations feature individual and small group actions. An insurgent movement grows through experience in combat against the government. As a result, another characteristic of insurgency training is the routine application of lessons learned in battle. Professional military establishments also make use of experience to modify and update training, but the process is less formalized, more immediate, and more pronounced within insurgencies because there is typically less room for error and failure. Conventional military forces, especially the most successful ones, focus on sustained operations. That is, planners, leaders, and soldiers are trained to think beyond the preliminary stages of a battle, campaign, or war, and instead to focus on the sustained application of combat power all the way through to mission completion, often described as the destruction of enemy forces or the control of terrain. Insurgencies, conversely, tend to focus instead on the initiation of armed conflict because the operational assumption is that they will have a short time interval during which to attack and that the attack will be followed by withdrawal, dispersal, and hiding from pursuing government forces. Hence, training often concentrates on achieving an effective first shot. These characteristics of insurgent training multiple purposes, strong ideological component, gatekeeping, clandestine environment, focus on individual training, inculcation of recent combat experience, and emphasis on the initiation of combat, drive insurgent leaders to develop efficient ways and means for training their members. Two of the most frequently used methods are the use of training camps and online training. Training camps. Training camps are the epicenter of terrorist and insurgent training throughout the world. As described in numerous first-hand accounts, the camps provide an environment of isolation, focused skill building, and indoctrination that can mass-produce deadly and committed warriors. Al-Qaeda maintained secret training camps in Afghanistan and Bosnia that were later exposed and destroyed. But these well-known examples are in fact typical of similar facilities in every corner of the globe. The Bekaa Valley in Lebanon has long hosted training camps for both Hezbollah and the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO. Libya, Algeria, and Tunisia hosted training camps for terrorists and insurgents throughout the late 20th century. Jamaa Islamiyah, JI, ran several effective training facilities that focused on weapons and explosives training for Indonesian terrorists. Likewise, both the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, MILF, and JI built training camps in Mindanao in the Philippines. The Tamil Tigers of Sri Lanka based several training sites in the remote north of their country. The Colombian insurgency, the Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, use training camps extensively, capitalizing on the inaccessibility of their terrain as security against government discovery of their facilities. As mirrored within other insurgent training regimes, FARCs included both hard skills and ideological topics. In 1982, the FARC established a guerrilla training center called La Escuela de Cadetes, the Hernando Gonzalez School of Cadets. Military topics included mobile guerrilla warfare, military psychology, urban guerrilla warfare, communications, first aid, cartography, artillery, and related topics. New recruits trained locally through a four-month course that included both military and ideological disciplines and the FARC's organization and code of justice. The Viet Cong's use of clandestine and isolated training camps illustrates the multipurpose nature of training. Viet Cong recruits normally received training at a location outside of their villages, where they also were subjected to extensive political indoctrination. The training was usually conventional, in other words, weapons use, marching, small units tactics, etc. Recruits who displayed the most potential received additional advanced training, as well as indoctrination, and were assigned to the main force units. The rest were used for guerrilla combat mission and other part-time assignments. Main force Viet Cong units, or the fighting arm of the organization, were made up of men who tended to be extremely motivated. They were directed by cadre and were full-time, uniformed soldiers. Typically employed to launch large-scale offensives over a geographically wide area, main force units had an average experience of over 2 decades in insurgency warfare, and many had fought against the French in the First Indochina War, some having even fought in the resistance movement against the Japanese in World War II. The fighters of the main force units were normally trained at recruiting camps separate from those of the guerrilla units. Insurgents have built training camps in out-of-the-way locations in Ireland, France, Peru, and the United States to train, indoctrinate, and radicalize potential terrorists and warriors for the cause. The Aryan Nations Church, for example, maintained a 20-acre guarded camp in northern Idaho where Christian Identity members received weapons and tactics training. Another Christian group, the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord, constructed a 224-acre base called Zarephath Horeb on the Missouri-Arkansas border, where they collected a huge cache of weapons and ammunition. A recent study of captured student notebooks from arrested terrorists in Uzbekistan provides insights into the nature of training in clandestine camps. The students, who trained throughout the mid-1990s, received instruction in map reading, small arms, demolitions, and poisons, along with ideological instruction in matters of jihad. Some were also instructed in Arabic and Russian, and there was some religious instruction as well, although the captured notes indicate that both the teachers and students lacked familiarity with the fundamentals of Islam. Detailed analysis of the notebooks indicates rigorous instruction in matters of targeting enemy vehicles, both air and ground, under various conditions. As described earlier, this emphasis confirms the insurgent focus on making the first shot count. What religious instruction the students received revealed poor scholarship and a focus on the nature and justification of jihad. The notes indicate a crude theme of anti-Semitism and xenophobia mixed with a sustained paranoia that Islam was threatened from without and within. This threat served as the justification to break with societal norms, peaceful religious instruction, the teachers of which were branded heretics, and respect for the government. In the place of these old loyalties, students were to prepare themselves for killing the enemies of Allah. These enemies included Israeli, Russian, and American visitors, along with Christians who attempt to proselytize or insult Islam. The students were to destroy any foreign business interests and any imported goods they found. After the Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982, elements of Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, moved into the Bekaa Valley and established the infrastructure for the formation of what would become Hezbollah. The Syrian-held town of Baalbek was the original site for their fledgling operation. Reinforced by clerics and agents from Iran's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Ministry of Intelligence and Security, the guards conducted military training and religious indoctrination for the embryonic insurgency. In late 1982, the Iranian-led cadres fanned out to outlying villages throughout the valley to recruit and indoctrinate potential members for the emerging insurgency movement. By 1984, the IRGC was operating 6 training camps in the Bekaa Valley and providing salaries, medical benefits, and free education for fighters and their families. The IRGC's main focus remained on acting as a conduit to Hezbollah for Iranian arms, money, and advanced training in guerrilla and terrorist operations. As Hezbollah developed through the 1990s, the organization became adept at hiding training camp activities. In part, this ability to remain clandestine was due to the degree to which Hezbollah became thoroughly integrated into Lebanese society. With hundreds of thousands of members and sympathizers, the organization's militant activities could easily blend in with its social and political operations. Likewise, the post-Civil War decision to legitimize Hezbollah's retention of arms and its self-appointed mission as Lebanon's main military force to oppose any future Israeli incursions blurred the distinction between terrorist training and the quasi-legal training of soldiers. Hezbollah's selection program for new recruits took about 2 years, during which time the young soldiers were thoroughly investigated for political and religious reliability, as well as for aptitude for special services. Once ensconced in a training camp, recruits received training and instruction in weapons, explosives, ambush techniques, infiltration, intelligence, and myriad other subjects, including psychological warfare. Hezbollah and IRGC agents paid close attention to actual combat operations, sifting through lessons learned in order to strengthen subsequent attacks. Al-Qaeda's training regime, like that of many other terrorist groups, puts a premium on religious indoctrination, which Al-Qaeda considers to be infinitely more important than the development of military skills. The exact ideology taught, however, differs from camp to camp based on the cultural context of each particular insurgency. In camps supporting ethnic-based insurgencies, for example, the ideology focuses more on the history and mythology of the subject's ethnicity and how it has been wronged. Other camps that develop jihadists for the restoration of the caliphate emphasize jihad as a religious duty. In addition to ideological preparation, the camps have become increasingly sophisticated in the training of hard skills. Weapons and guerrilla warfare courses are followed by training in advanced techniques of assassination, surveillance, counter-surveillance, document forging, suicide operations, and heavy weapons. Since the 1980s, when the United States provided support, including weapons and training, to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda experts have relied heavily on American and British doctrinal sources, field manuals, training circulars, etc. Training camps established in permissive or semi-permissive countries can evolve into highly effective institutions for training terrorists. Al-Qaeda's camp at Darunta near Jalalabad, Afghanistan, was one such location and typifies the smaller facilities. Only about a quarter square mile in size, it consisted of a tunnel complex, four sub-camps, each with a different purpose, and a defensive system of trenches and outposts. The entire complex was camouflaged. Within the camp, Al-Qaeda ran a chemical training laboratory and a guerrilla training center. The Taliban owned a part of Darunta, and Pakistani terrorists operating in Kashmir ran the fourth sub-camp. Investigation of the abandoned site revealed extensive training and indoctrination materials, many in English, and much of it downloaded from the Internet. Darunta produced many terrorists, including Raed Hijazi, alleged to have planned attacks in Jordan, and Ahmed Ressam, convicted for plotting to blow up Los Angeles International Airport during the Millennium celebrations. The Zawar Keeli complex near Khaust in Paktia province, Afghanistan, was a huge installation featuring a base camp, tunnels, and a cave system that was improved to reach deep into Sajaki Gar Mountain. Al-Qaeda used the location as a logistics base, command and control center, and training base. It boasted a hotel, repair facilities, arms depots, a medical clinic, and a mosque. Generators provided the requisite power for the extensive compound. After the Africa Embassy bombings of 1998, the United States targeted the complex with cruise missiles. Training online. The evolution of the Internet, personal computers, portable digital devices, and wireless communications has revolutionized many aspects of society and conflict. The underground function of training insurgents, resistors, and terrorists is one such dimension. Prior to the advent of the Internet, access to information sources on weapons, explosives, tactics, etc. was fairly limited. Today, with a click of a mouse button, anyone can download a manual that instructs him or her how to carry out illegal attacks and other operations. Online resources for insurgent and terrorist training include both motivational and operational information. Most often, these two categories are combined into a single document because the psychological preparation of a student is deemed to be equally important as his or her development of hard skills. Motivational information comprises psychological, sociological, political, and/or religious components. The motivational approach often includes an explanation of the right way. In other words, how God, the Constitution, historical predecessors, or some other past or mythical phenomenon represented the perfect moral, spiritual, or political condition. In contrast to this right way, the motivational literature will then describe the present condition that requires correction. The appeal is for the audience member, alone or in concert with others, to become the agent of correction. Hezbollah, under the direction of its senior leaders, developed a video game called Special Force, in which players experience a simulated operation against Israeli soldiers based on real-life events. The game was released in 2003 and allowed players to conduct target practice against Israeli political leaders. Thousands of copies of the game were sold in the Middle East, in the United States, and throughout the world. Through the publication of a game, Hezbollah was able to export both its ideology and a form of skill building that would prepare youngsters to one day assume the role of jihadist. Hezbollah copied this training technique from American supremacist groups that offer on their websites similar games engendering racial hatred. These games allow players to kill Jews, black people, or other targeted groups in first-person shooter formats. Examples of online resources for insurgent and terrorist training include The Terrorist's Handbook, How to Make Bombs, Book 2, the Irish Republican Army's Green Book, the Turner Diaries and the Field Manual of the Free Militia, used by American Christian militias, Harakat al-Muqawama al-Islamiyah, Islamic Resistance Movement, or Hamas, the Hamas Mujahideen Poisons Handbook, and the Al-Qaeda Handbook. The widespread availability of such resources both facilitates training and serves as a recruitment and self-radicalization engine throughout the world. Timothy McVeigh, the American terrorist whose bombing of a federal building in Oklahoma City killed 168 people, was strongly influenced by the Turner Diaries and similar literature. Radical literature, coupled with detailed instructions on the making and use of weapons, has become easily accessible to all and created a new dimension in the fight against terrorism. From the insurgents' point of view, however, these developments are a godsend. The most salient expression of online insurgent training is the ever-growing community of hackers. Thousands of new websites emerge annually that offer instruction and tools for hackers. While such sites offer little motivational information, they are replete with operational know-how, tips, tricks, and best practices. Visitors to such sites can learn detailed techniques for conducting denial-of-service attacks, stealing passwords, overloading websites, and probing networks for vulnerabilities. They can also download tools for encryption, programming, and data manipulation to facilitate their efforts. Islamic jihadist groups all over the world have devoted resources to encouraging their followers to conduct cyber terror attacks and providing training and tools to assist them. Conduct of training. Training is central to the success of an insurgency. The most successful and long-lived movements treat this key underground function as a major area of concern and focus for leadership. The experience of the Provisional Irish Republican Army is instructive as an example of how an insurgent organization plans, organizes, and conducts training. The Provisional Irish Republican Army, PIRA. The Provisional Irish Republican Army organized a training department under its general headquarters with the responsibility to maintain all training resources and facilities. They conducted training in three areas: new recruit training, operational skills training, and intelligence, counterintelligence, security training. During new recruit training, the emphasis was on motivational information, in other words, what it means to be a Republican and the history of Irish resistance against the British occupation. The latter two phases of training focused on the necessary hard skills to conduct operations and to protect the security of the organization. New recruits were required to attend training sessions about once per week during their first 3 months in the organization. The sessions included lectures and discussions about member duties, the history of the organization, the rules concerning military engagement, and how to resist interrogation. During this period of initial training, the recruit was also evaluated as to his potential for service and his risk to the security of the organization. The PIRA learned to emphasize rigorous training and instruction in hard skills, weapons, explosives, urban and rural tactics, etc. The cost for training deficiencies in these areas is primarily ineffectiveness. Unsophisticated attacks by impulsive and unskilled youths merely invited arrests, interrogations, and political failure. Likewise, inexperience with weapons and explosives caused numerous deaths among the insurgents through fratricide and premature explosions. Eventually, the PIRA developed a military training program that put recruits into covert training camps where they learned to shoot and maintain weapons, employ demolitions, and other basic skills. Due in part to the requirement for secrecy, the average PIRA insurgent's training took about 6 months. The difficult security environment caused leaders to emphasize individual training over collective training. Before the advent of the Internet, it was difficult for insurgent leaders to get access to training resources. PIRA operatives solved this deficiency by recruiting former military members, obtaining printed military manuals, and in some cases commissioning members to pursue education opportunities that they could use in later insurgent activities. In the 1970s, PIRA leaders had to devote resources to producing written materials to support training. This resulted in, among other products, the infamous Green Book, which included both ideological and operational information for aspiring members. These efforts paid off in better operational performance. Better trained insurgents began to operate collectively instead of individually, giving them the ability to stand their ground in pitched skirmishes with government forces. Marksmanship improved, and British casualties consequently grew. Beyond the general training of recruits in weapons and tactics, PIRA leaders also sought to improve performance in bomb-making, sniping, logistics, and intelligence. Specialists in these areas would occasionally come together to receive training and pass on lessons learned with the intent of improving safety, security, and performance in battle. The ever-present danger of compromise made these meetings and collective training in general a risky operation. If a bomb maker, for example, was interrogated or turned disloyal, he might divulge the identities of other bomb makers and disrupt the entire insurgency. Clandestine training requirements do not facilitate live-fire weapons training. Weapons ranges, especially those designed to handle mortars, explosives, and other large weapons, tend to be noisy and hard to conceal. The PIRA used remote locations throughout Ireland, including abandoned farmhouses, unused beaches, and woods. In one case, they used a beach for mortar fire using dummy, in other words, non-explosive, shells. In other cases, they positioned their live-fire ranges near army training facilities so that their gunfire noise would not attract attention. Likewise, recruits were often kept ignorant of the exact location of the camps where they trained in an attempt to prevent the authorities from discovering and shutting them down. The PIRA also turned to other sympathetic groups abroad for training support. They had relationships with Ethniki Organosis Kyprion Agoniston, National Organization of Cypriot Fighters, or EOKA, Greek Cypriot Terrorists, the Basque group Euskadi Ta Askatasuna, Basque Homeland and Freedom, or ETA, Fatah, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, and the PLO in the Middle East. PIRA agents trained abroad with these groups, including in training camps in Libya. Conclusion. Training remains one of the core functions of an insurgent underground. Through the training regime, underground leaders select, evaluate, and develop recruits to populate the underground, guerrilla, and auxiliary forces. Recent developments, including the expansion of the internet, the privatization of security operations, the end of the Cold War, and the advent of globalized jihad, have combined to facilitate effective insurgent training to a degree previously unheard of. The insurgent leader's traditional problem of lacking access to training materials has been supplanted by almost unfettered access to advanced information on a wide spectrum of useful hard skills, weapons, explosives, guerrilla tactics, surveillance, communications, and so on. Insurgent training differs considerably from the training of conventional forces. The primary difference is the emphasis on ideological preparation. Because leaders must replace the recruit's previous loyalty to the government with an allegiance to a radical ideology, training includes immersion in propaganda, whether religious or political. A recruit's mastery of and devotion to this ideology determines his or her potential for advancement within the movement. Insurgent training is also characterized by its adaptability to the conflict environment. In most cases, training operations must take place clandestinely, which in turn affects the content and conduct of training. Clandestine training most often aims at training individual recruits and very small units, because dealing with larger units would compromise security. Likewise, training tends to aim at optimizing the opening minutes of an insurgent attack, rather than sustained land combat operations. Finally, clandestine training tends to take longer and unfold through separate episodes. Conversely, training in permissive or semi-permissive environments, such as those enjoyed by Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, allows for more intensive and continuous training. Another key difference between the training of insurgents and conventional forces is the gatekeeping role. In the former, recruits are constantly evaluated for reliability, aptitude, maturity, ideological fervor, and military competence. Only those who pass the scrutiny of underground leaders are admitted to more advanced training and given access to the movement. Finally, insurgents put a premium on the rapid assimilation of lessons learned. Battles, acts of sabotage, terrorist attacks, and other operations, whether they succeeded or failed, are scrutinized for mistakes and best practices. These lessons learned are rapidly converted into new training techniques, with a view to improving the next attacks before security forces can adapt.